It's good to have you with us, Ambassador Herbst. As a former top diplomat in Uzbekistan, I'm sure you have been watching the unfolding political drama in Uzbekistan. How would you define it? What's happening in your view?
Well, the first thing to acknowledge is that we don't know that much about what is actually happening, because significant political developments in the country occur behind closed doors. But what's unusual right now in Tashkent is the clear differences within the president's family, and I'd say the related pressure to which President Karimov's older daughter, Gulnar, has been subject by Uzbek authorities. Her business interests, which are substantial and not necessarily acquired in an ethical way, have been subject to serious pressure from government institutions. And that's very unusual.
How much has the country changed, do you think, since your time? It's run by the same leader, but do you see any kind of an evolution in the way the country is governed now?
Well, I left Tashkent over 10 years ago, although it is true I followed events there from the outside. I think that the country, the political leadership, both in terms of the style of leadership and the personalities involved, has not changed much in that 10 years. Again, obviously President Karimov is still in power, but the decisions taken, you know, basically in secret, and then the country's informed. One thing which is new, by and large, in my observation, the senior Uzbek elite has been quite cohesive. In other words, you don't really see major fights between senior members of the Uzbek elite. In that sense, it's very different in Uzbekistan than not just in Kyrgyzstan, which has a semi-democracy, but even in Kazakhstan, which has, like in Uzbekistan, an authoritarian regime. Because in Kazakhstan, senior political figures have challenged Nazarbayev, and they've suffered for it. But that hasn't happened at all in Uzbekistan. And also, you haven't seen cleavages publicly.
The events unfolding has never happened in modern Uzbekistan before. I mean,
right.
We have a presidential daughter who until recently, as you said, was a very powerful figure who could essentially
right.
do whatever she wanted to do in the country. She's now
right.
being targeted by the system, which
right.
is run by her father. And
right.
Gulnar Karimova says that it is the work of the National Security Service, and she calls this a struggle for power based on a specific plan to push her out, to get rid of her. How alarming is the situation?
Well, I think for her, it's quite alarming. For Uzbekistan, not so much. She was the beneficiary of her family situation. In other words, she used the fact that she was the president's daughter to accumulate great wealth in the country. My understanding is that in the process, she angered many people, not just the average Uzbeks who have no chance at accumulating wealth, but other powerful interests. Now she's getting her comeuppance. Now, why is that happening? I really can't say. I don't think this suggests that Mr. Inoyatov is making a bid for power. I don't think he would be doing this without the approval of his boss, the president. So you're right, this is a different situation than what we've seen in the past. But it's the levers of power are being used, and the political system is working the way it always has. And that's not in a particularly pretty way. I mean, the use of police methods against people. But she would be she's the last one who could complain, because she was the beneficiary of such police methods for many, many years.
Do you see the international community getting involved at some point? I mean, so far we haven't heard anything from the United States, and we know that they're watching it up close, and they haven't expressed anything on the scandal. Off the record, some U.S. officials say that they do not intend to get involved in any way. But then there are some, you know, a few possible scenarios. For example, Gulnar Karimova could eventually ask for an asylum. We know that she's under investigation in Europe, and she may not be heading there. She's got American children whose American father lives in the United States. How complicated could this get? When and under what circumstances would the U.S. Embassy do something?
This is a hypothetical question. I'm no longer a government official, so I'm willing to answer a hypothetical question. There's no reason for the U.S. to get involved in this at all. there are no issues of human rights here. Again, she can't complain about being on the receiving end of police methods when she was on the delivering end of them for such a long period of time. Now, if she were to ask for asylum, it's possible it might be granted on humanitarian grounds. But it's also true that I know from my time there that she had some legal problems here relating to the status of her American children. So I don't know if she would be welcome in the United States because of those problems.
We know that some significant human rights developments took place when you were ambassador in Tashkent. UN Special Rapporteur on Torture was allowed into the country.
Right.
Izgulik Human Rights Organization was registered. Right. In fact, that's the last time, you know, any local NGO, human rights NGO, was registered.
Right.
What do you think it was about the U.S. policy at that time that created room for that? Is there anything that teaches us about that time today?
Very good question, and let me start with some general comments. In the main, the human rights situation in Uzbekistan is very poor. There are, as in my day, today there are thousands, what I consider political prisoners. It's true that many of these prisoners are, by their outlook, they accept an extremist form of Islam, but from my standpoint, that does not mean they should be in jail unless they committed a criminal act. And American diplomats are always promoting fair treatment of citizens, are always promoting human rights. So when I was in Tashkent, that was an important part of my job. I think American policy during my time in Tashkent had some small successes in the human rights area. You mentioned a couple of them. And the reason why we had those successes were that Mr. Karimov was interested in a closer relationship with Washington, and he knew this was important to us. So that's why we were able to make some progress. But we could not make major progress because, I would say, some aspects of the regime, I mean, they're used to using police methods to control their people, and that's unfortunate. And also, I think that they don't understand that you can prevent people with extreme views from doing criminal acts without arresting them, and certainly without torturing them. You know, the fact that a person has an extreme view of Islam does not mean he's necessarily going to pick up a gun and shoot someone. And I'm not sure that is understood at senior levels in Tashkent. So those were obstacles during my time, and they're obstacles today. But I believe the human rights situation got worse after I left because the relationship between Tashkent and Washington got worse. And part of that was that I think Mr. Karimov was hoping for more from the United States than he could have legitimately expected. That was one. But then, two, after the Rose Revolution in Georgia and the Orange Revolution in Ukraine and the Tulip Revolution in Kyrgyzstan, I think President Karimov became concerned that Western influence could lead to unrest in his own country. And so he also distanced himself from the United States. That's when he took the decision to terminate our base in Karshikanabad. Since then, he's decided that, well, maybe the United States is not a threat to his political control of the country. You know, we've had a second honeymoon, as Uzbekistan has helped us with the Northern Distribution Network. But still, the whole regime in Uzbekistan is not one that respects human rights, and that's a problem.
In your current position, I believe you focus on failed states, right?
That's right.
And what makes a failed state in general?
A failed state is when the quote-unquote ruling government is unable to provide essential services and does not have full control of its own territory.
Any examples?
Somalia, Democratic Republic of the Congo. You could say Afghanistan is not necessarily a failed state, but it's a state that could fail.
None of the Central Asian states.
None of them are failed states. Tajikistan certainly has serious problems of stability. I would say Kyrgyzstan also has problems of stability, although not as much. I don't see instability in the other three Central Asian states, and I would not overstate the instability even in Tajikistan.
With the United States pulling out of Afghanistan by the end of this year, if you were still in government and serving, what would you focus in Central Asia, specifically, for example, in Uzbekistan, as the United States wants, you know, obviously to maintain the relations, to improve the relations? Where should the focus be?
I think our policy at the present time in the region and in Uzbekistan is a sensible one. You know, we try to maintain good business-like relations with all of the governments. With Uzbekistan, we have some important security interests relating to our withdrawal from Afghanistan, and also relating to fighting terrorism and drugs. And I think we would like to continue to encourage the government in Tashkent to consider a more enlightened approach towards human rights and towards its citizens' political participation.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Herbst.
You're welcome.